Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, folks. This is just a reminder that there's a Leapster meetup happening in London this Sunday, the 28th of July, 2019, at 2 p.m. And I can confirm now that I will be coming. I am coming to the meetup. I'm going to be in London this weekend, and so I'm going to come to the meetup in order to take part, meet some listeners, have a drink, maybe play some board games, and generally have a laugh with you if you're coming. I'll also be accompanied by James, my brother, and two of our friends. That's the plan. I can't completely guarantee that they will be joining me, but they've said that they're up for it, so I expect that they'll be there too. But at the very least, you'll get me, and hopefully you'll get James and a couple of friends too. So I've spoken to Zdenek Lukas, the guy who's actually hosting the meetup, and he says that there are, I think, five or six people confirmed so far. I expect there'll be more. So where is it? Well, the Fitzroy Tavern near Oxford Street and Tottenham Court Road in central London. The full address is 16 Charlotte Street, London, W1T2LY, and put that postcode into your Google Maps app or equivalent, and it should direct you there. W1T2LY. It's actually W1T space 2LY. That's the postcode that you'll need. When? It's going to be 2 p.m. on Sunday, the 28th of July. That's this coming Sunday. The host is Zdenek Lukas. You'll recognize him in the pub because he will be the guy with the board games. There'll be someone there with some board games on the table. That is Zdenek, and he's your man, okay? If you're coming, please send Zdenek an email just to let him know that you'll be there so that he has an idea of how many people to expect. His email address is teacherzdenek@gmail.com. You know how to spell teacher, but Zdenek is spelt Z-D-E-N-E-K. teacherzdenek@gmail.com. Just say, "Hi, Zdenek, I'm coming to the meetup. See you there. Bye," and then add your name, obviously. You know your own name? You do? Good. Okay, so that's that. Come along if you're in London. It would be nice to see you and chat with you. I'm not sure I can stay for the entire thing, but certainly I will be making an appearance, and it'll be good to meet you. Okay, right, so moving on. The sponsor for this episode is iTalkie. Let me just tell you about them for a minute or so. So if you want one-to-one lessons in a very convenient way, maybe you're looking just to improve your English and you're trying to find a teacher, you can have lessons with iTalkie using Skype or similar software. Yeah, look no further. iTalkie is the service for you. They have loads of teachers to choose from. It's a very user-friendly service. You can schedule a series of lessons or just a one-off lesson if you want. You can choose to have conversations with error correction or more specific things like grammar for accuracy, pronunciation work, lessons for different professions, exam preparation or job interviews. Whatever you need, you can find a qualified teacher for it on iTalkie. And once you've gone through the process of finding a teacher and booking some lessons, then next thing you know, you've got your own one-to-one teacher who teaches you through Skype or through some other software. And when your lesson's finished, you just close your computer and go about your day. It's really convenient and great. When you buy a lesson, iTalkie will send you a voucher which you can use for a free lesson in the future. That is the offer that they have for you. It's basically buy one, get one free at the beginning. So to get the offer, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk. Or just click an iTalkie logo on my website. Okay, right, so let's get this episode started properly. And here is the jingle.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
So, hello listeners, how are you? I hope you're doing well. Here is the second of a pair of episodes that I recorded a couple of weeks ago while I was on holiday with my family in England. That's the same holiday during which I got the two flat tyres on the car that you heard all about in the last episode. I've had quite a few comments about that episode. It seems people really enjoyed it, which is very nice to know. So during the holiday, my wife, our daughter, my parents and my brother all travelled down to the south coast of England, where we spent some time at the beach in places like Lyme Regis, Seaton, West Bay and other parts of the Jurassic Coast, as it's called. Yes, that's the Jurassic Coast. That's the name of that area of coastline on the south coast of England. The Jurassic Coast, not Jurassic Park. We didn't go on holiday in Jurassic Park. No, because that's not a real holiday resort, you should know. It's just a film. Obviously, that wasn't a documentary. Those weren't real dinosaurs, okay? No, so we spent a week on the Jurassic Coast. I know what you're saying now. You're going, but Luke, what's the Jurassic Coast? Are there any dinosaurs there? Well, there are dinosaurs there, actually. So here's a quick extract from Wikipedia, which should explain. So the Jurassic Coast is a World Heritage Site on the English Channel, coast of southern England. It stretches from Exmouth in East Devon to Studland Bay in Dorset, a distance of about 96 miles, and it was inscribed on the World Heritage List in mid-December 2001. The site spans 185 million years of geological history, coastal erosion having exposed an almost continuous sequence of rock formation covering the Triassic, Jurassic and Cretaceous periods. Ooh, nice. Nice, lovely, classic periods, weren't they, those ones? Dinosaur fans are probably loving this. Ooh, they're my favourite periods, Luke. Triassic, Jurassic and Cretaceous. A classic time. So basically, in that area, the rock that is exposed there is from these periods. And as we know, you probably know, those periods were rich in dinosaur activity and all sorts of weird prehistoric creatures. So at different times, this area has been desert, shallow tropical sea and marsh. Marsh is like sort of wetland. And the fossilized remains of the various creatures that lived here have been preserved in the rocks. So basically, there are loads of fossils to be found there, including dinosaurs. So yes, there are dinosaurs down there on the Jurassic Coast, but they're just a bit dead, that's all. They've probably been dead for about 185 million years, and they've like sort of become stone. They've become fossilized. But anyway, I digress there into prehistory. And different creatures, ancient creatures. But speaking of ancient creatures, more recently, my family had an English coastal holiday on the Jurassic Coast. And yes, the weather was fantastic. Blue sky, sunshine, not too hot. It was just right. And I'm not even joking. I'm not even being ironic. I'm totally serious. The weather was fantastic. I know most of you will be like, ha, he must be joking. No, I'm not. I'm serious. The weather was great. And while we were there spending time on the beach, yes, we did spend several days on the beach doing usual beach type things like swim. I swam in the sea and all that stuff. While we were there, James and I decided that it might be a good idea for us to record a podcast all about the English seaside experience. So that's what this is about. Not really about dinosaurs. I may have given you the impression I was going to talk about dinosaurs and stuff, but there's a little bit of dinosaur, a couple of mentions of dinosaurs, but no, the English seaside experience, that's what we're talking about. So what is it really like at the beach in England when you go on holiday there? What kind of beaches can you find in England? What are the typical things that happen at the beach? What sort of things can you see and do there? What is the culture and history of the English seaside? That is what we attempted to achieve in this episode. I say attempted because it was actually quite difficult. I mean, the subject is actually quite a big one with lots of things to include, but it was difficult mainly due to the conditions in which we recorded the conversation. So I recorded this in my parents' living room. The audio quality is good, I reckon. But we recorded it quite late at night after everyone else had gone to bed. We'd eaten a fairly heavy meal that evening, because my mum is a great cook, and so we always completely stuff our faces with food while staying with my parents. It's just like, more please, more, and then, oh my God, I'm so full. So late night, we were full, quite sleepy. Also, the holiday had been quite active with lots of sun and fresh air. And of course, we had spent a long and tiring day on our unexpected road trip the day before. As a result, the vibe of the episode is quite sleepy and generally quite low energy. Now, actually, listeners, this is what I wrote earlier. This is the introduction I wrote earlier. This is before I'd actually edited the episode. So I've just finished re-listening to the conversation and sort of editing a little bit here and there. And actually, it's not as low energy and sleepy as I thought. But anyway, I'm going to continue with my introduction here. So, slightly sleepy vibe. In fact, James, who was sitting on the sofa, became steadily more horizontal as the recording went on. At one point, he even lies down to continue podcasting in the fetal position with his eyes closed. Now, I can get quite frustrated and irritable sometimes while recording with James. I think it's just a brother thing, you know, brothers sort of kind of sometimes rub each other up the wrong way. So I get sometimes a bit irritated with James because I'm trying to produce nothing less than top quality English podcast content for my international audience of listeners. And I sometimes fear that his general sleepiness will be interpreted by you as a lack of enthusiasm. And I wouldn't want that on the podcast, would I? No. I always want nothing less than 100% enthusiasm in my episodes. So at certain moments, you will hear me getting quite angry. And actually, I very nearly gave up the recording at one point. I was ready to stop. But James assured me that he wasn't about to fall asleep and that he would, at the very least, keep his eyes open in an effort to stay conscious while podcasting. So there is some strong language, and that means swearing, things like, you know, the F word, the F bomb, as people call it. There's a bit of swearing and just other moments when I start kind of having a go at James, showing my irritation and trying to keep the energy up. Now, I could have edited those bits out, but I've chosen to keep them in because having listened back to this recording, I actually think they're quite funny and entertaining. And after all, I want my podcast to be authentic. And what's more authentic than the sounds of genuine bickering between two brothers? So in any case, there are only a few moments of mild arguing and swearing. I mean, not that much bickering. In fact, having listened back to it, as I said, it's actually quite pleasant. It's quite nice. But any moments of tension are quite normal between James and me. But, you know, we love each other, really. And as I said before, I now only really want to express my gratitude to James for agreeing to be a guest on the podcast again when he probably just wanted to go to bed. So anyway, let's begin. So come with us now as we enter my parents' comfortable living room late on a warm evening in July as James and I raid our dad's drinks cabinet, share a glass of Scotch whiskey together and attempt to explain the sights, sounds and perhaps smells of the English seaside in all its glory. And here we go. Is this how you normally talk?
Depends on the situation.
It sounds like you're sort of whispering a bit. It sounds like we're both kind of whispering slightly like David Attenborough, maybe.
Well, as we witness,
here we are on the podcast, whispering for no apparent reason.
Well, we can just say it's fairly late, everyone else has gone to bed and we don't want to wake them up.
We can say that now because I'm recording.
Oh.
What's going on? Where are we?
We're in our parents' house after a family holiday. Mm-hmm. To celebrate our mum's birthday.
This is the holiday during which we had the flat tire incidents.
Is that episode going to be before this one then?
I think that episode will be before this.
It's a pretty dynamic episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Action-packed, thrilling, live, unplanned, raw and uncensored.
What did we do on that holiday? Amongst other things,
we went to the seaside.
We did. We spent some time on the beach in England. And some of you out there might be thinking, but you can't go to the beach in England and do normal things that people do on the beach in England, can you?
Well, you can. And we do. We did. We do. We do. And we did.
The stereotype, the reason I say that is because I suppose there's a stereotype around the world about England, which is it rains all the time and it's cold, right? And when people think of England, they probably think of stuff like, you know, the Houses of Parliament and Buckingham Palace and London and things like that, right? It's also, listeners, it's quite late. So if you hear the sounds of yawning going on in the background,
sorry,
that's purely, completely reasonable because everyone else has gone to bed. And here we are recording a podcast late into the night. You see how committed we are to podcasting, international podcasting.
And I haven't even got a beer.
Do you want a beer?
No, I think I might have. See if there's any whiskey or something.
We could have a little drop of whiskey.
Yeah, that's, well, you keep recording and I'll see if I can find some whiskey.
Go ahead. You'll need glasses. I mean, not...
No, I see perfectly well, thank you.
I mean, glasses to drink out of. Oh, so funny. So, yes, I was talking about the stereotype of... many stereotypes of England, that people just imagine that it's cold and raining all the time and that you couldn't possibly enjoy spending time at the beach. Like, you know, some of you listening to this will have amazing beaches. Maybe you're from a country that has, the Mediterranean coast. And, those are proper beaches, right? Sun shining, it's boiling hot all the time. And the sea is not freezing cold. And you might kind of think about England and think, that's ridiculous. It's sort of this industrial place where it's cold and all that stuff. But not actually true, not technically true. We do have beaches. Of course, the UK is a series of islands. It's my dad sneezing in the background. I don't know if any of you could hear that. You probably couldn't. Unnecessary details, Luke. It's late at night. Forgive me. The UK, of course, is surrounded by water. And so, yeah, we've got loads of coastline. And some of that coastline is in the form of beaches. Some of it's all rocky and there are just cliffs and things. Not really a place that where you can safely spend a lot of time. Because you'd fall off, wouldn't you? If you went to a cliff, a big rocky cliff with your beach towel and stuff. That's a nice serving of whiskey. James has just found in the cupboard a bottle of, what is that, famous grouse, which is, I guess, a blend of Scottish, Scotch whiskey, grain and malt whiskey blend. It's kind of a standard, fairly average quality Scotch. It's all right, he says. Anyway, it's going to be, it's got a bit of water mixed with that. Is that normal? Do people normally add water to their whiskey? We can't hear you. You're not speaking into the microphone.
Depends on the individual's taste.
Okay.
I like to mix it with a little bit of water. That's what I can't think straight. It's a bit late. It's what the...
Connoisseurs.
That's the word I was looking for. That's what the connoisseurs do. But normally with malt whiskey, not blended whiskey.
It's going to be one of those episodes, ladies and gents.
Right, okay. Cheers.
Anyway, cheers. Nice one. Mmm.
Not bad.
Warming. I mean, it's the middle of summer, and we're drinking warming drinks to keep us warm. Mmm. What taste? Can you give us a description of the taste?
Tastes like whiskey.
The sort of thing that cowboys drank in the Wild West.
Yeah, I don't really normally drink whiskey, but it just feels a bit late to be drinking beer somehow.
Mm, I know what you mean.
I mean, we've eaten quite a heavy meal, so that's the point of whiskey, right? When you don't want to consume a lot of liquid, but you still want to get slightly drunk.
The thing about beer is that that's quite a lot of liquid.
And it's like a meal.
And it's carbonated as well. So it kind of fills you up quite a lot. And you don't necessarily want to have that after you've eaten... And, fairly soon before you go to bed.
This is rambling.
I told you.
Don't worry, I'm not, wasn't a criticism.
I said to James before we started recording, I said, I really try to make episodes about certain subjects, and they always go off on major tangent rambles. But that is the essence of what this is. That's what I do on the podcast.
Don't get uptight. It's just fine.
I follow the train. I chase the train into wherever it goes.
Okay.
Okay, so we're talking about beaches, and I was saying that the UK does have beaches. We've got different all sorts of different types of coastline around. Mm. I mean, we've got to talk about England, really, and maybe Wales, because we haven't spent a lot of time in Scotland, okay, have we? So we can't really talk about Scotland.
Okay.
So let's just talk about England, what we know.
All right.
There are quite a lot of... different types of coastline around the country.
Lots of nice coastline. There's sandy beaches. There's big, long expanses. Like Norfolk's got a lot of huge expanse of sandy beach.
Because Norfolk and East Anglia generally is very flat. And so you get these large sort of open flat beaches without cliffs behind them, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where we were was Norfolk. No, sorry, was Devon and Dorset. Which is in the south coast.
Southwest, yeah.
Southwest, and they have more rocky terrain. Some beaches are sandy, like Lyme Regis, which is quite a famous one.
But you know, Lyme Regis, the sandy beach at Lyme Regis, that's sand that's been imported in.
Bullshit.
It's true. If the sand wasn't there, it'd all just be, what do they call it?
Pebbles.
Pebbles, yeah. Pebble Beach.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, that sand was imported in and added onto the coast, to the beach there.
You're really telling me that whole thing was a deception?
It's all fake. It's
fake
all
sand.
Fake beach.
Well, most of it's quite...
You didn't actually experience that. None of that actually happened. It was all fake.
Well, okay. I like pebbly beaches just as much anyway.
Do you? Yeah.
I'm not really a beachy type person. I don't really get the whole vibe of sitting on a bit of sand and burning.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. By the way, what are pebbles, we should say?
Small stones, small rocks.
Why did you say it in that voice?
So like saying rocks in an American accent. Mm-hmm. They're small pebbles, roundish. They make a good noise when you're crunching along on them. You can throw them at things.
Mm-hmm. But it's not the same as being on a sandy beach, is it? Because at a sandy beach, it's comfortable between your toes, and it's soft, and you know you can put your towel down, and it's comfortable, right?
Yeah, I mean, we did spend a day on the beach, and I just basically slept.
what a surprise, listeners!
Luke went for a swim.
Sounds like he didn't quite wake up. I'm just making fun. I went for a swim.
Impressive.
Why is that impressive, going for a swim at the beach? That's what you're supposed to do at the beach.
Because it can be quite cold.
Mm.
But on a hot day, it's very refreshing, apparently.
So, I mean, like, obviously, England has got different coasts with different seas. So down there in Devon or Dorset, the Jurassic Coast, it's called, by the way, folks, because of the geology of the area. There's like lots of Jurassic rock from the Jurassic period. In fact, there's lots of fossils that you can find along the coastline there. Fossils of, you know, old like creatures that died and then turned into stone, right? Oh, God.
I think you're turning into stone.
Oh, dear. Sometimes it's hard to podcast for learners of English because you kind of like, you talk and you realize that sometimes people just have no context for what you're talking about. No one knows what we're talking about. And maybe even some of the, you know, just certain words they don't understand.
You're making it worse. You started out talking about seaside, sand, rocks, stone. Yeah. Understandable. Now you're talking about Jurassic coastline.
Well, that's the name of that area of the coastline. It's called the Jurassic Coast. And why is it called the Jurassic Coast? People are going, well, what, are there dinosaurs there? Well,
yes, there are.
There are dinosaurs.
Everywhere.
Fossils of dinosaurs.
And also seagulls, which are like modern dinosaurs, if you watch Jurassic Park. And they're just as vicious as any dinosaur you care to mention.
Seagulls?
Gulls.
Gulls, what are they?
Seabirds. Not just seabirds, but generally live by the sea. They're large, winged...
birds.
Avian species.
The birds, basically.
They're big, bloody, mad birds that fly down and eat your lunch.
They're those white birds that you get at the beach.
Herring gulls.
Herring gulls are the specific...
They're big white birds with grey wings, and they've got a little red spot on their beak, which looks like blood, which is quite cool.
Do you know why they've got that there?
For the babies.
That's right. So to encourage their young to take food from the mother or father's bird's mouth.
But they're quite nutty, aren't they? And they've realised that the beach and all the tourists is a good source of food and protein for them. So they instead of scavenging for like dead fish and stuff like they should do, they eat your fish and chips, and they're very good at it.
They're thieves. They're marauders.
Thieving little
bastards.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're quite big as well, and they can be quite scary if you're not used to it. It's quite funny as well, watching people have their food taken off them.
So where we were, listeners, at Lyme Regis, which is down on the Jurassic Coast, as I said. What's funny about that? He drank some whiskey and kind of snorted. Was that you laughing or were you reacting to
it? It was me kind of trying not to laugh.
Okay.
Don't know why.
So at Lyme Regis, it's common for people, as it is in many other resorts around the country, to get things like fish and chips or crab sandwiches and stuff from the local places at the beach.
Fish and chips were lovely.
Yeah. But you've got to be very careful when you've got your fish and chips in your hand, because the seagulls these days are extremely bold and confident, and they will fly in and grab them out of your hand. In fact, someone that we met down there told us that they'd seen a seagull actually grabbing food out of someone's mouth.
Really?
Yeah, ice cream. The person was eating ice cream, and the seagull came down and snatched the ice cream out of the person's mouth.
Great, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them take a small dog as well. That would be good. I mean, there's lots of dogs there, and I wouldn't mind if a few of those got taken by seagulls.
You don't like dogs?
This is going to really...
Yeah, because, you know, everyone loves dogs around the world, of course, and they're all going to hate you now. Like, he doesn't like dogs. What kind of monster is he?
I don't hate them. I really don't hate them. I just don't like them either.
Well, what's wrong
with
them?
There's just too many of them, and they're nasty little things.
No, they're not. They're lovely. They're cute. They're affectionate. They're loyal.
I've turned your whole listener
alienated
everyone again. It's not that I don't like them.
You know, in places like where people listen to this podcast, people are passionately pro-canine in these areas. You know, people love dogs, James.
They love dogs more than annoying.
Why?
I don't know. It's probably my fault.
Because they bark and they
create disgusting poo that you have to avoid. And
I have to be honest, all the dogs that we came across, and we came across loads of them, they were all fine. Like, I didn't have one problem with a dog this holiday.
They're not a problem.
Oh, you just hate them, but they're not a problem. They're not a problem.
It's kind of a bit of a joke within the family that we pretend that we don't like dogs for comic effect.
We're not a dog loving family. You know, we've never had dogs. We've had cats, but we've never had dogs. And
it's kind of one of those things joke. That when you see other people adoring their dogs, you just think there's something a bit wrong with them, and maybe they're a bit simple. And the way people talk to their dogs as well, like they're humans, like they have full-on conversations to them. It's like the dog doesn't understand what you're saying. It just wants to eat the food that you're going to give it eventually.
Yeah, but I mean, in defense of dogs,
but I've met many dogs that I love and know and love, and my friends have got dogs and they're great, and I think they perform a useful function when they're guiding blind people across the road.
That's it. They should only be for blind and elderly people.
They're very good working on farms, and I understand old people rely on them for company, and everyone else should just get rid of their dogs.
Let me bring this back to normality.
Bring this back. I like dogs.
So,
okay?
Listen,
I quite like some dogs.
My daughter, your niece, who's 18 months old,
loves dogs.
Crazy about dogs already, and she spent so much time this holiday having loads of fun spotting dogs, and every time she saw a dog, she'd point at it and go, like, you know, make noise. And she started to speak English this holiday.
And the owners generally go, do you want to meet?
She's very nice.
She's very friendly. about the dog, and we look at the dog and think, yeah, they always say that, don't they? Or it rips your head off.
It's like when you see a dog owner walking in the park with their dog, and the dog looks like a ravenous monster, like a Rottweiler, like, frothing at the mouth and barking.
Oh, don't worry, he doesn't bite.
It's like he's lovely. He's like, he doesn't look lovely, I have to be honest.
He doesn't bite.
He looks like he would murder me and eat me.
He'll unlock his jaws eventually.
Anyway, but from the point of view of my young daughter, dogs are wonderful, cute
things. And it is very sweet when you see a nice dog owner walk over with its dog and introduce the dog to your daughter.
And
your daughter pets the dog and strokes its soft fur, and the dog looks very happy, and it's a very cute scene.
Yeah, and my daughter gets so excited, she kind of like, she can't control herself, like she's almost jumping up and down because she's so excited to meet the dog. And
she loves animals, doesn't she?
Yeah, all animals. Like she loves to see birds and, you know, all of those different
horses.
Things.
She loves that horse.
Horse. We stayed in a house on a farm. And there was a horse in the field next to the house, and she was nuts about this horse. And you could see the horse from different windows in the house. So we'd be sitting down.
She'd just point at it.
She'd be sitting down at breakfast. We're eating, we're feeding her. And she just goes, and points out the window and says something sounding a bit like the name of the horse, which was Leo.
Weird name for a horse.
Leo is the name of a lion, isn't it? Leo the lion, right? I'm going to call a horse Leo.
It doesn't sound like a sort of pet name.
Not Leo.
Not that they're a pet. No, horses aren't pets, but...
You mean it sounds like a person's name?
Yeah.
Like,
it's like Kevin. You wouldn't call the horse Kevin, would you?
This is Michael, the horse.
You think they'd normally call something like Cherry Blossom or something stupid for the racehorses, like Thatcher's Revenge or something like that. Or
racehorses have always got ridiculous
race
names.
Racehorses, yeah.
But like a farm horse, you'd call it what? What would you call it, like Rosie or something? But that's a person's name as well. Anyway.
We're tangenting.
Yeah. But anyway, this horse was called Leo. And so my daughter would point and go, you know, what would she say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounded or a bit something. Like Leo.
Yeah. She's only 18
she's
months
only
old.
She's only young. Give her a break.
But anyway, she loves animals. So from my daughter's point of view, dogs are wonderful. And we did see lots of dogs there.
And they were all lovely.
And they're all lovely. Okay, dog lovers? Dogs
just
are
chill
okay.
out. They're fine.
Yeah. So different types of beach, James.
Right.
Seagulls.
Right,
we were talking about seagulls. You've got to watch out for your fish. You've got to watch out for your fish and chips when you're
so
on the beach.
A lot of our beaches here aren't particularly sandy, although some of them are. A lot of them are quite stony, rocky.
Yes,
like I quite like that, and they're quite often. They're not the kind of beaches you see in kind of Australian and American films. They're more
Australian films, all those Australian films that we know and love.
About beaches. About,
set on beaches.
Okay, there's no Australian films about beaches, but...
maybe there are. Probably
there
are.
Might be.
But anyway,
it's not like a tropical beach. It's like a stony, hard beach. A lot of British beaches.
Yeah.
Especially the further up north you get. But some of them are sandy, and some of them you can play on and play games on and go surfing. Even in Cornwall you can surf.
Can I mention just a few key beaches around the country?
Because I can never remember the right ones.
Right, so I'll go through them. Right, so you've got Brighton, which is obviously just an hour south of London.
Very stony beach.
Pebble beach, right? It's a lot of
mods and rockers.
Well, wait a minute, a lot of tourists visiting the UK or visiting London will visit Brighton, and they'll go to the beach and they'll see what it's like. It's a stony beach. A lot of my students in London that I used to teach who would go to Brighton would come back on the Monday, and I'd say, what did you do at the weekend? And they'd say, we went to Brighton. And I'd say, what did you think? And they'd be disappointed by the beach because
it's not a very nice beach.
Because it was pebbles. But it's, you know,
it's not just the pebbles. It's just not a very nice beach.
But the thing is that what maybe they expect from a beach experience is that kind of Mediterranean beach or something.
Palm trees, coconuts falling on you, giant crabs, like skewers, pirate ships.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Caribbean.
24 hours a day sunlight. I know that's not possible.
In the North Pole.
Yeah. There aren't many great beaches in the Arctic Circle, though, are there? Listeners in Murmansk.
Unlikely.
Listeners in Murmansk in Russia, you can confirm or deny. What are the beaches like up there in the middle of summer? 24 hours of sunlight, I expect. I don't know if you get 24 hours in Murmansk. Anyway, so Brighton, Pebble Beach, all right? And if you go to in a westerly direction, you end up, you know, places like, let's say, Lyme Regis, which is also pebbly, but there's sand there too. If you keep going, you get to Cornwall, and you can kind of go round Cornwall, and you get places like Newquay, which is a beautifully beautiful sandy beach, golden sand, and you can surf there.
There's actually quite a strong surf scene in Newquay and Cornwall and stuff, although Newquay is very, very busy with tourists nowadays.
Mm.
It's probably wouldn't be my recommendation just because it's so popular.
Somewhere like St. Ives, if you can make it there, St. Ives is a fantastic place, but it's also very busy with tourists in the peak seasons. Impossible to park your car there.
Yeah, it's a bit much sometimes.
But if you can make it out to St. Ives, it's fantastic. Beautiful beach, lovely golden sand.
And Fistral Beach, where's that? That's in Cornwall, isn't it?
I'm not sure. Don't know. And then there are places like Port Isaac, which is a lovely little seaside town on the coast, and kind of nestled in within the hills there. You know, English beaches or English coastal places are sorts of places where you meet sort of old fishermen with grey beards and blue woolen jumpers, and they're
like, "Arr!"
No, it's true.
I've never met an old fisherman in a blue jumper.
Well, you have.
But
I
don't get out very much.
No.
Where are we going?
Well, I'm just trying to talk about the different types of beaches.
Okay, sorry. Yes, rocky beaches. That's about it. They're all flipping rocky.
No, there's a lot of sandy beaches too.
Okay, and some of them are sandy.
Yeah, all right. like for example, Newquay and St. Ives. Beautiful golden sand. Also, Norfolk, as you mentioned before, which is all the way over on the eastern side. Long, flat, sandy beaches there too. What's Blackpool like? You've been there, haven't you? It's sandy, isn't it?
I think it's actually stony.
Are you sure? I think you don't know.
I went
actually
in the off season when I last went, which was about 30 years
ago. Does that make a difference to the sand?
Well, no, it means you're not going to be spending a lot of time on the beach when it's free. And it was night time when we were there.
Where is Blackpool, by the way? Let's see if he knows.
West coast, kind of.
Northwest.
Northwest, that's what I was going to say.
North of Liverpool. Yeah, it's sandy. It looks fantastic. When the tide is out at Blackpool Beach, you get this very long, sandy beach.
And they have
beach.
The Blackpool Illuminations, which is a load of lights. Think Las Vegas, but in Blackpool.
The Las Vegas of the North, isn't that what they call it?
They do. Well, some people optimistically call it that. It's something about the English or the British seaside is quite depressing in a weird sort of way.
How?
Well, because they're not necessarily economically that strong. And in the summertime, they're very busy and full of tourists. And out the rest of the time, they can be quite desolate, empty, bit of deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a slight melancholy to beaches to some of these resorts, you could say, out of season. So in the winter and any time except summer, really. And there's a sort of transient financial economy. So during the summer, it's very busy. And during the rest of the time, it's kind of quite quiet and a bit dead. And so I quite like that, though.
See, the thing is, right, that if tourists go to the beach in England, they might be surprised at, I don't know how to describe it, really.
It's quaint. That's a good word.
You see, that some beaches, okay, let's say there's two types of beach in England. There are the upper sort of class places, which are, quaint and upmarket. You're going to find like places to have tea and cake, maybe just off the beach.
Maybe some newer restaurants which are a bit more fancy, is that the word? A bit more expensive, a bit more upmarket.
Some upmarket restaurants where you get really good seafood.
There's been a bit of a slight renaissance in seaside towns in recent years. Some of them are becoming a bit more fashionable, like Margate, apparently, although I haven't been there for a long time, has seen some people moving from London. Mm-hmm. And there's some kind of youthful energy around some of these smaller towns, but some of them are still a bit not doing so well, and some of them are, I can hear a baby.
I can't.
Okay.
Look, this is really hard work. It's so late. It's so late. I'm so tired. So we need to probably talk about the history of English seaside resorts a bit.
Well, I haven't done any research.
Yeah, well, hold on. I can give a basic history on it. So there's like, let's say there's two types of beach resort. There's like the kind of slightly more upmarket places where you're going to get lovely seafood restaurants where they get the local fish from the local fish markets. They're like fishing towns and stuff like that, where there might be small, pleasant little beaches and probably some quite expensive properties in the area. Maybe some bed and breakfasts that you can go and stay at. And places like Devon and Dorset are a bit like that, and Cornwall as well. But then also a lot of the beach resorts in the UK, in England, it's certainly, are working class holiday resorts. Okay, so that's because if you go back to the Industrial Revolution, right, when the railways were invented, and you know, England had arguably the first railways in the world, maybe France too, but certainly England was one of the first countries to have railways. Okay. And we were an industrial country, which meant that there were lots and lots of people working in the cities, working in factories, working in the industries. Okay. And when the railways happened, that allowed people to travel from the cities to other parts of the country fairly easily without having to spend too much money. Suddenly, at that point, people working in inner city areas were able to go on holiday at the beach in England, okay? And as a result of that, a whole kind of culture of the seaside came about.
Very good.
Right? And it was kind of a working class thing. Because if you were rich, where would you go? I mean, you know, you might even go abroad if you were really rich. You might go...
You could have gone on a grand tour of the world even.
Yeah, maybe.
Or you would have gone to some of the more established and upmarket places in the UK, possibly.
Yeah.
But for the average working guy and gal,
yeah,
they could get a train or even a coach later on and visit the seaside and stay in a B&B, which is a bed and breakfast, a small, cheap hotel.
Yeah. You wouldn't
and
be
you
able
could
to
have your beach experience for relatively cheap and affordable price. And involved in that is lots of cheap fun, family fun.
And also, if you live in one of the big cities, like London, Manchester, something like that, you'd probably go to one of the beach resorts that's like as close as possible to the city that you live in.
Yeah.
So for the big industrial northern cities like Manchester, it would be somewhere like Blackpool. So Blackpool became maybe the biggest beach resort of the north, and we mentioned before that it was like the Las Vegas of the north. That's because at Blackpool, all of these attractions,
and that was also around the time of the invention of the electric light bulb, so they went to town on that and created big illuminated lights.
Yeah,
which some are impressive, some are less impressive, and you could say it's a bit dated now, but they make a big deal out of the nighttime stuff as well as the daytime.
Yeah, a lot of lights that look impressive at night, and a lot of, you know, basically like sort of crappy casinos and places where you go to, You know, just like Las Vegas. Imagine Las Vegas, but smaller and in England.
And not a bit rubbish.
And yeah, a bit kind of rubbish. And also there would be theatres and things showing popular entertainment.
Musicals, theatres, cinemas.
Yeah, stuff like that. So, you'd go for a fun holiday at the beach, at the seaside. And it's kind of working class culture, isn't it?
Yeah, fish and chips, sticks of rock.
What's rock? Sticks of rock.
Which is a candy or a sweet in a big stick, which is made out of melted sugar,
it's
I guess.
It's just sugar, isn't it?
And there's a clever way they can write the name of the resort through the rock.
Yeah.
I still don't know quite how they do that.
I don't know how they do that either.
But it's a whole stick of rock. You can just Google it.
It's basically like a big stick of coloured sugar and it wrapped up in plastic, and you buy it at the seaside and then you eat it.
And it's got the name of the resort running all the way through it, which is quite clever.
If it says Blackpool in red sugar all the way through your white and blue stick of sugar. I'm sure it's more than just sugar. They have like different flavors. They have like peppermint flavor.
Yeah,
and
it's mainly
like that.
It's usually peppermint.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like a sort of a cultural institution, isn't it? The English seaside
the stick
resort.
Of rock. You'd have fish and chips, or whelks and eels, or whelks and what are the other ones?
Cockles and mussels.
Cockles and mussels.
So these are kind of shellfish that can easily be found at the seaside and then are cooked and sold. But these days you don't get all that
they're
stuff
not as,
really.
They're not. There's some places up north you can still get whelks and cockles and mussels and stuff, but they're not as popular as they used to be. But some people love them. But they're not as posh as sort of oysters and mussels.
Well, we did just say mussels, cockles and mussels.
Oh, okay.
But then, you think about France, like some of the French resorts.
Moule, Marigny.
Where,
it's not as posh as that.
Yeah, there's like oysters. But you can get oysters in England. But as I said, that's probably in the more upmarket places. But many of the seaside resorts will be more cheap and cheerful. And so you're getting kind of ice cream and fish and chips and amusement arcades.
It was kind of going back to the Victorian era, the sort of the invention of entertainment, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's arcades where you can play pinball and games like that. And there's piers. We're going to talk about piers.
A pier is like a wooden structure that goes out into the sea from
quite a long way.
Yeah. And there's a pier in Brighton.
Which burnt down.
Well, there was the one that burnt down, and then there's the new pier as well. And a pier is, imagine like a big wooden bridge that goes all the way out into the sea, and then it just stops. Okay? And the idea is that it's like a wooden sort of platform going out into the sea on wooden legs. And on that pier, you get all these things. Like you can have a fun fair on the pier, right? A fun, things like roller coaster rides and merry-go-rounds and things like that on the pier. And also you'd have amusement arcades. These are places where you go and you put coins into the machines and you can play games. And basically the game is how much money can you lose? It seems to be the game.
Yeah. And they have slightly saucy entertainment.
What's that? Saucy.
Slightly rude. Or
sexy.
Suggestive. Not overtly
sexual.
More innuendo-based than anything else.
So what kind of thing does that mean?
Like postcards maybe of girls.
With their boobs out.
Well, maybe not exactly.
Or
not,
just
not
rude, slightly rude situations on a postcard. Like, ooh.
Like bad jokes.
Like a woman bending over to do something, and then there's a man there where he's got an ice cream, and his ice cream is dribbling all over his hand or something. Oh, a picture, and he's looking embarrassed,
And it's a kind of a culture that is very English, I think. That kind of smut. It's not actually sexual. It's more suggestive.
Yeah, and it's comedy, really.
It's comedy. Yeah, it's turning something sexy into something funny
because
or naughty.
For us, we still have some, but maybe because of our Protestant puritanical past, that we have a weird relationship with sex where we still think that there's something slightly naughty about it.
and like, sort of funny, and you, it's something to laugh at, to get rid of the fear of it. We laugh at it.
Yeah, that we're uncomfortable about it. Not everyone.
I'm not.
Yeah, neither am I. But we're something slightly uncomfortable and shy about it, and so we have to put comedy into it to make ourselves feel less uncomfortable. It's a bit complicated,
but
isn't
it? It's an aesthetic, you could say, the sort of end of a pier, seaside style.
Yeah.
And you can maybe put some examples on your website.
I'll try and find some images or something that I can post on the website so people can see what I'm talking about.
What else are we going to talk about?
Well, so our day or two that we spent at the beach, right? You said that you slept through most of it. But
I did, I'm afraid, because I'm a bit like that sometimes.
A bit of a sleepy person, as people can hear from... I mean, he's even lying down while recording this, ladies and gents. To be fair to James, it is about 12:30 at midnight. Half past 12 at midnight? That's not English. It's 12:30 midnight as we record this. So if we do sound half asleep and a bit confused... That's why, okay, folks? You see how committed, as I said before, how committed we are to podcasting?
And
James is yawning.
I also went for a wander around a vintage secondhand shop while you were doing something else on the beach.
Is that specific to English coastal?
No, but you get stuff like that. You get, like, secondhand shops and sort of weird shops by the seaside and...
These days, it would be shops that sell, all the stuff that you need for the beach. And also, they would sell, tourist merchandise.
Tat.
Postcards and sort of like signposts that look like they're signposts to the beach, but it's like something you put on your bedroom door, you know?
Yeah, there's loads of that crap.
And it's kind of, it's stuff like, what would it say? Stuff like, you don't have to be mad to work here, but it helps. That kind of thing, if it's something for the office.
Like Beach Hut and stuff that's all made in China to make look like rustic English stuff, but it's actually just copies of old stuff.
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay.
I don't know. It's there's a cheap and cheerful vibe to the seaside, am I right? It's a kind of...
Can you get a suntan at the beach in England?
You can get burned. You can get very sunburned if you're not careful. It depends on the weather, obviously. But this holiday was sunny for a whole week.
Yeah. And this was
very hot sun. Like, I had to put suntan cream on. I burnt my knees.
This is the middle of July, okay, listeners. We spent a week, yeah, as I said, on the south coast. And, yeah, it was hot and sunny every day. Probably temperatures about 25 degrees on the middle of the day.
Even hotter.
Which is, you know, and for some people listening, it's like 25 degrees. That's not hot, but that is actually quite hot for England.
I think it was hotter than that.
And that's good. 25 degrees is a good temperature because 30 degrees is too hot, in my opinion.
I can't move or think anything above 30.
Yeah, and if you
my brain stops working, I start sweating uncontrollably. I start to think, okay,
I might
this
die.
This isn't funny anymore. I can't actually handle this.
This is a survival situation.
I need beer and I need a cold beer garden.
Yeah, you need to desperately get into the shade. Like above 30.
I don't like being in sun for a long period of time. No. Anything longer than an hour, I start to panic and I have to start running around looking for shade.
I've been to beaches before in different places in the world where... It's freaking boiling and I can't do anything. To an extent, I don't understand the culture of going to the beach. I love going to the beach in England because it's manageable. It's never too hot. And if you get some shade, if you find a parasol that you can stick in the sand and get into the shade, then it's comfortable. It's quite cool and comfortable. You don't have to be at maximum, like, I'm about to die temperature. But I've been to... some beaches where it's like, you know, you get down to the beach, right? And then the first thing you do is try and cover yourself up from the sun and you slather cream all over your skin. Why do we do that? Why do we want to go to the beach and then hide from the sun immediately?
I don't really like putting on suntan lotion and then staying in the sun. I like to put on a bit for safety's sake, but generally just stay out of the sun.
Yeah.
And I like to be a bit brown, like to get a bit of a tan, but I don't really like sunbathing.
So if I, you know, if I go to the beach, like, for example, I went to Goa in India, totally great place, totally terrific. But it was too hot there. And so being on the beach there, and it's also the same in parts of France where it's hot in the summer, where you go down to the beach, right? And I want to bring a book with me, yeah? If I'm going to spend time sort of sunbathing on the beach, I want to bring a book. So I, if I lie on my back and I hold the book in the air above me, I can't see the book because it's a silhouette against the sky. Right, James?
Yeah.
And if... He's actually got his eyes closed.
I haven't. I was blinking.
Very, very slowly.
And I feel then, like we're being quite noisy.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to talk so that you'll actually... I don't know.
I'm listening.
And then, so I can't lie with my back on the sand or on the beach towel with a book above me because I can't see the book and the sun blinds me. And if I roll over and I've got the book down below me, you know, I'm above the book is on the ground, and I, the sweat just pours off my head and lands on the book. I can't do it. So an English beach is just right for me because I'm not sweating. It's not too hot. And he's falling asleep. Fuck this.
I'm not falling asleep.
I wrote some things down on little
Let's keep going.
I wrote things down on little bits of paper here. Okay? So we've been talking for about 44 minutes. So we're nearly done. All right? And then we can just go to bed, listeners.
Okay.
Does it make a difference to the listening experience if I get angry? Does that make it better?
No, it makes it worse.
Are you sure? I think that it might make my experience worse. Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's for worse for them. But they might be finding this more engaging.
Because you're more, getting irritable
the more
with
emotionally... I'm not necessarily getting irritated with you. I'm just, you know, sometimes just the world becomes a complicated place.
The more emotionally engaged
I am in this, the more interesting and engaging it is to listen to.
Okay.
Whether that is anger and irritation or like just pure passion for the English seaside, I don't know which one it is, but I wrote some things down on bits of paper. History of the seaside resort. We've kind of done that a little bit. We've got places like Margate, which is to the east of London. Right,
supposedly quite trendy these days.
But
I haven't been there, so I don't know.
But it's probably, I don't know where you all come from, but for many people, it would be quite sort of I don't know, like a tacky sort of place. Tacky. How would you describe that?
A bit shit.
Yeah, it's kind of like stuff is made of like cheap plastic, and it's not like the most high grade. Quality stuff.
That's what I mean about slightly melancholy feeling of the seaside sometimes.
It's all made of very sort of cheap yet cheerful stuff, right? And, you know...
And they can be very quiet out of season. We've said this already.
Yeah, we've already said that. That's that piece of paper done.
Okay.
Candy floss.
Oh, forgot about that.
Candy floss is
another
something...
Another sugary, snacky product.
Something you can buy at the seaside. What is candy floss?
It's fluffy sugar.
Yeah. How do they make candy floss?
They spin it out of a spinner. And there's this big, I don't know exactly how drum. It works, but there's a big drum thing. And it turns the sugar into like thread almost, like cotton.
It's like cotton wool.
Yeah. And it fluffs
pink.
Up and you put a stick in and spin it. And the thing spins round and it attaches to itself and becomes a big fluffy cloud of sugar on the end of a... Stick.
So what you have is a stick in your hand with a big, imagine a big fluffy pink cloud of sugar stuck to a stick.
I'm sure they have it in other countries.
Yeah, they must have it in other countries.
We didn't, well, maybe we did invent it, but...
One of our proud British inventions.
Oh, yeah.
A cloud of pink sugar on a stick.
Yep.
This is what makes Britain great. # Brexit.
Oh, God.
So what else have we got? Candy floss is something you might find at the beach. Kiss me quick hats.
I think they're a bit of a myth, but...
What is it first?
It's a bit of that end of the pier stuff. It's a little paper hat that you stick on your head and it says, kiss me quick. Fuck knows what that's all about.
The idea is, I suppose, that because you're having such fun and you're so liberated by being at the beach that someone might kiss you. And so you've got a hat and it says, kiss me quick. And hopefully a pretty lady would come and kiss you if you wear that hat. Isn't that it? Or is it an ironic thing?
It's not ironic. I think it's sort of like saying I'm up for it.
It's like, hey, we're at the beach. Hey, kiss, come on, kiss me quick. But no one actually wears kiss me quick hats anymore.
No, no.
It's just an old fashioned thing. But it's still sort of a little cultural, what's the word for it, sort of feature of an English seaside resort. But it's the sort of thing you would see on a postcard, but not necessarily actually do or wear in the real world.
Yes.
Sticks of rock, we've talked about that. Fish and chips, of course, because, you know, England's famous for fish and chips because we're surrounded by the sea, so there's loads of fish.
I read a little thing while we were on holiday about the origins of fish and chips. Apparently it comes from the continent.
Does it really?
And they said something like Italians brought it to the UK, and the first records of people selling fish and chips were continental type people from France and Italy.
So, listeners, tourists,
I don't know when. I don't have a date for that.
If you've been to England and you went, well, English people eat fish and chips, don't they? Let's have some fish and chips. And you ate it and you thought it was rubbish. Blame Italy, all right? And their supposed great food culture. They are responsible for fish and chips. Okay, thanks, Italy.
I bloody love fish and chips.
Me too. But there are good fish and chips and bad fish and chips. If you're in London, don't have fish and chips.
There's some good ones in London.
Really? Where?
Oh, yeah. Spitalfields Market. There's one called...
Spitalfields Fish and Chips. And don't worry, folks, we won't spit in your fish and chips. It's just the name of the place.
One thing I've noticed that's very suspicious, a lot of them claim to be the best fish and chips in the UK.
Yeah?
And there seems to be a lot of them claiming that. Award-winning, best fish and chips in UK, Fish and Chips Awards 2017. You're like, well, how many fish and chip awards are there? Because they all seem to think they're the best.
One for every single fish and chip shop. They've got a different award for it. Windswept is a word that I wrote down. Windswept.
Very windy, cold. This is a good English holiday. Windy, cold. Your hat flies off. It's the sand blowing in your face. There's no sun. It's freezing. You've got a pack-a-mac on, which is like a little fold-up.
Plastic raincoat.
You're really desperately trying to have a good time, pretending that you're having a good time. Actually, everyone hates it.
Shut up. But windswept.
And you're eating sandwiches on the beach, fuck you, I'm going to have a good time. And you're picking sand out of your, like, with a thermos of tea.
Sounds lovely. I honestly think that it does sound nice. Imagine a windswept beach somewhere.
With nobody on
with
it.
With no one on it. And you found a place where there's no one there. And the beach is wide and open. And there are, like, maybe some sand dunes in the background. And the sea, the tide is out. So the beach is really long and flat. And you can see the sea in the distance. And it's windswept. It's windy. So that means that... you know what wind is, but windswept is an adjective to mean when a place has got wind coming through. And yeah, you might find a nice place in the sand dunes where you're protected from the wind, and it's actually quite warm there when it's not windy. And yeah, you've brought a packed lunch, you've got a thermos of tea, and, you know, you've got a sweater on, so you're not cold, and you sit down there in the sand dunes and you have your lunch. It's great. You get some sun. This is July we're talking about, folks.
It's quite nice to go to seaside in winter, though. It's a different experience. It's not like, hey, this is great. It's more like, you stare off into the horizon and kind of think about things and kind of breathe in the fresh air and kind of go, yeah.
And then you go home and write a really good English novel.
Yeah, and you come home and your cheeks are very red because you've been out in the wind and the cold, and it can be a nice experience, but just not in such a obvious way.
Yeah, it's a sort of invigorating experience.
Yes, invigorating.
You can go for a good sort of bracing walk along the beach.
Yeah, and try not to fall off a cliff.
And you might go to the edge of the water and, you know,
see a dead crab. kick it around with your shoe a bit and then go, should we go back?
Or you walk out along that flat beach, and you find like pools of water with.
You have to be careful because the tide can come in very quickly. Actually, quick disclaimer: check the tides. It does happen. People do die in situations like that. So be aware.
The English seaside holiday. So have a good time. Just make sure you don't die.
Just check you know what you're doing, and don't go out on one of those dinghies out onto the sea. Because you get swept out to sea and they'll never find you.
You're painting a very bleak picture.
I know, it's a joke. But seriously, do be careful.
Don't you like it when you go out to... You walk along a beach and the sand has kind of gone into those little sort of... How do you describe it? The sand has... You know what I mean? Like the sand has gone into little ridges...
Oh, yeah, the little wind shape.
No, it's like the water.
Yeah, I know.
The water shaped the sand into like little wavy ridges under your feet.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And the sand is all sort of packed in. It's great. You can walk along it and leave little footprints behind you. And
you can draw huge things in the wet sand, like massive drawings if you so want to,
and you can build big sandcastles,
and you can make a big pile of stones, and then you sit somewhere with a big handful of stones and try and knock over the big pile of stones with your smaller stones.
We've spent a lot of good times on holiday with our parents.
That might sound boring, trust me, it's a very addictive game.
When you are on let's say you've gone on holiday with our parents, as we did obviously growing up, and they've taken you on a bracing 3-mile walk along some desolate, barren coastline, which is actually very beautiful.
Yeah,
and
it's beautiful.
You stop and you have your packed lunch in the sand dunes, and then you find a spot where there are lots of stones, and you make a pile of stones down the beach, and then you walk back and you collect lots of stones together, and you know your pile of stones are maybe sort of 10 feet away or, you know,
further,
10 meters away or further, whatever. And then you have a little competition with each other, see who can throw the stones and hit your pile of stones first. It's actually lots of fun. That's the kind of holiday we had, throwing stones
At
other stones on a barren, desolate beach.
With nobody else in sight.
With no one else in sight. But
that's the good thing about going in winter.
But you've just eaten a chocolate bar and life is pretty good. What else? I do like to be beside the seaside. Oh, I do like... What's the lyrics? Oh, I do like to be beside the sea. I don't know the rest of the lyrics. I've got them here on my phone.
And that sound I was trying to make is a sort of organ at the end of the pier in these kind of entertainment places. You might hear it's very associated with the seaside, this... Not a Hammond organ. What kind of organ is it?
I don't know. It's just some sort of old-fashioned organ, like before the
it's
days.
That kind of wobbly sounding.
Before the days of electric synthesizers and electric keyboards, they used these old organs. I'll play you a little example.
Let's hear some organ music from the seaside.
Well, all right.
Let's hear.
I mean, you're going to hear a kind of a synthesizer version of an organ, but it's still the same thing. It's fine. Let's see if we can make this work.
Pretty accurate. Beside the sea. Oi.
So that's the sort of thing you might hear at one of those working class seaside resorts, like somewhere like Blackpool. The lyrics, hold on a minute. How do I get back to the lyrics?
Have a banana.
hold on. Let me desperately try and find the lyrics here for this. Okay, all right, here they are. Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside. Oh, I do like to be beside the sea. Oh, I do like to stroll along the prom. What's the prom?
The promenade.
What's the promenade?
Bit like a pier.
Well, the promenade is basically the thing
on the side
that goes along the length of the beach. Yeah. So you've got the water, the sand, and then the promenade, and then the buildings.
Yes.
Right? So the promenade is like a paved walkway that you can walk along.
Yeah.
And that's where you get all things like the you know, people selling ice cream and candy floss and stuff like that as well.
All that shit.
And maybe there would be, back in the olden days, there'd be a brass band on the promenade. Right? So, I do like to stroll along the prom, where the brass bands play tiddly on pom pom. So, just let me be beside the seaside. I'll be beside myself with glee. And the lyrics go on. For there's lots of girls beside. I should like to be beside the seaside, beside the sea.
What's the bit about the girls?
So, let me be beside the seaside. I'll be by Be
there's lots of girls myself. I'd like to be beside the seaside.
Well, there's lots of girls beside, meaning...
As well.
I should like to be beside.
I'd like to be next to.
Beside the seaside.
Beside the sea.
Beside the sea. So just let me be beside the seaside. I'll be beside myself with glee, meaning I'll be very happy.
And beside yourself means you're so excited you're almost jumped out of your own body.
I'm beside myself.
Beside myself.
Means
I've had an out-of-body experience.
It's true, though. I'm beside myself with glee means I'm very happy. For there's lots of girls beside. I should like to be beside the seaside, beside the sea.
Like, oi! Basically early form of rap music. Very clever wordplay there.
So that we talked about walking along the promenade. You have to walk along the promenade, no matter what the weather.
What else have we got?
I've got some other things here. Holiday camps.
Butlins.
They're old-fashioned holiday camps, which basically used to be package holidays for people who didn't want to, you know, who wanted a simple holiday experience. You pay one price, and it includes basic accommodation, entertainment, and
food
and probably food as well,
probably not booze though, but the booze would be very cheap.
You have to pay for the booze, alcohol that is. Illuminations we've talked about, like the Blackpool the lights that they have there, like a low rent version of Las Vegas. Fun fairs, amusements, the end of the pier. So the end of the pier is a phrase that we use to describe certain kind of very popular entertainment. So if something is described as being end of the pier, it means it's kind of like...
crude, rude humour.
Crude, simple, rude, crowd-pleasing humour. That's end of the pier stuff. Donkey rides. You get donkey rides at the beach in England. God knows where the donkeys come from.
But poor little things.
But they have donkeys on the beach and kids can, you know, you pay a little bit of money and your kid can ride a donkey up and down the beach. That's entertainment, folks.
That's entertainment.
Punch and Judy shows. That's the sort of thing you'd find at the beach and maybe
going back into time now, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, Punch and Judy is something they also have in France. But
what do they call it in France?
The Guignol. Guignol? I can't remember.
It's a puppet show.
It's a puppet show, but it's a weird puppet show.
Very violent.
It's a puppet show for kids. Basically, it's like a pop-up theatre for children. And you imagine a kind of a thing that a man could stand inside, like a box that a man could stand in. And up above him, he holds his hands up. You can't see the man because he's covered. He's inside the box. But he holds his hands up.
It's like a little mini theatre up there.
It's like a little stage. And he holds his hands up and he's got two puppets. And he does a show.
Well, loads of puppets. There's Punch, who's the man.
There's Judy.
Who's an aggressive, drinking...
Alcoholic.
There's Judy, his wife, and they beat each other up.
Yeah, she hits him with a rolling pin and he beats her up.
There's this baby, which gets thrown around between them.
Yeah.
And the baby gets thrown up in the air. It's quite clever. The puppet master, puppet bloke, can make it so that the puppets can throw this little baby up and down and catch it again and slap it onto the ground.
It's when you look at it properly,
it's sick.
It's a very frightening scene of domestic violence.
And there's
violence.
Always a crocodile as well.
There's a crocodile in there as well. And isn't there a police officer as
there's
well?
There's a policeman.
So it's basically a form of knockabout slapstick entertainment for children, which... actually, when you look at it properly, is a scene of domestic violence. It's disturbing, but there it is. That's the kind of thing that people used to use as entertainment, sort of how many years ago? 50 to 100 years ago.
100 to.
And they're still going, probably. It's the sort of thing that people look back on with nostalgic, you know, with nostalgia.
But we had a Punch and Judy show come to our school.
Yeah.
When we were kids. I remember seeing one and being pretty blown away by it as a child.
What, being?
Very impressed.
Yeah.
I'm slightly scared as well. But it's amazingly skillful the way the guy can manipulate these puppets to, especially when the baby got thrown around.
Yeah.
I was thinking, how the hell does he do that? Because they catch it with a puppet.
Yeah.
And they slam it into the ground and then toss it. With these, instead of hands, the puppets have like these little paddles.
Yeah.
Like little flat little paddles.
Yeah, their hands are like these flat
and
things.
And it's very noisy. And the guy speaks with a little thing in his mouth that makes him talk like that.
It's like a little kazoo that, you kind of speaks like this. It's
mental.
Weird. Very
mental.
Weird. Yeah, it's the sort of thing that, you know, foreigners who hadn't grown up in the UK would come and see it and think, what on earth is this? This is really weird.
It is really weird.
Most countries have got very weird things, you know, when you think about it. Most countries do weird, weird stuff that you don't question because you just grew up with it. Swimming in the sea in England.
I have done. I used to do it a lot. And I've swum in the sea a lot in England and in Scotland, where it's very cold. Mm-hmm. And it's something you should do if you can. I couldn't be bothered this time because I'm very lazy. But be careful out there, yeah?
So swimming in the sea in England, it depends kind of where you are. So we were on the south coast. The water is relatively warm down there. So I went in. If you paddle in the water, that means just walking up to your knees or something. Paddling, it can be like, oh, wow, it's actually quite cold, isn't it? But when you really go for it, you walk in up to your waist. That's when it's like, oh, my God. This is, you know, when the water hits your balls. Oh, that's quite an invigorating experience. But then you have to just go for it. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, 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 come on, let's do this. Oh, and you go in. And once you're in, it's not that bad. It's quite refreshing and
nice.
You
come out and you feel much better.
Yeah, you feel really great when you come out. But some places in England, the water is freaking freezing, okay? We're talking about the North Sea.
Yeah, so, the North Sea is very, very cold.
So on the northeast coast, ladies and gents, you're swimming in the North Sea, which is really cold. But people do it. People go and swim in that.
People do it on New Year's Day and things like that.
People on New Year's Day in the middle of winter, people are jumping in the sea on the 1st of January
or Boxing Day or any time of year.
But for a summer holiday where you'd normally expect people to be bathing in, you know, in the crystal clear sort of Caribbean waters or something, if you're in Skegness or something on the northeast coast and you swim in the sea, I mean, that's dangerously cold water, probably. And that's it. That's all I've got now on my bits of paper. I've used all the notes up. Sorry for coming across as aggressive towards you in that, James, but I'm just trying, as I said, I'm just trying to keep the emotional engagement up. And as you recline and get more relaxed, I have to get more
animated,
you see. Because if we both reclined and relaxed as much as you did with your eyes closed and you're doing now, then I just feel like the whole thing would just grind to a halt. So
have you ever fallen asleep during a podcast?
I haven't, but I'm sure they have.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
In fact, I get reports all the time of people saying, oh, I love your podcast. It really helps me fall asleep. Oh, okay. Fine. Well, you know,
whatever does it for you.
As really. long as you're not doing that while you're driving, then I'm happy.
Good point.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, our holidays come to an end, James.
Yeah.
Our holidays come to an end.
Bummer.
I'm going back to France tomorrow with the wife and kid.
I'm going back to that London.
Listen to him yawning. If you're not asleep now, folks, listening to my brother yawning will do it for you. You know,
I'm just thinking about going back to work.
Me too. I've got to go back to work Monday morning. I'm teaching intensive English classes. That means 6 hours a day.
How intense is it?
As in, well, how intense could it be?
Right. Okay, you guys.
You know, like hairdryer in the face kind of stuff.
It's like boot camp.
Yeah. How intense do you think they would like it to be?
Right. You are now going to learn English.
English, motherfucker. Do you speak it? What country are you from? What? What ain't a country I ever heard of? They speak English at what?
The Samuel L. Jackson School of Teaching English.
The Samuel L. Jackson School, the Pulp Fiction School of English Teaching.
It's a good sketch idea.
They did it in the film, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
But
he wasn't actually literally talking about learning English, though, was he?
But intensive general English, yeah, intensive English classes. The idea is that it's like, you know, 6 hours a day for 5 days, 30 hours of English crammed into a week. It's called an intensive course. But yeah, I mean, I could make it more intense for them.
You could introduce snakes into the class, maybe.
Exactly.
That would be pretty intense.
Yeah, like really quick.
Really dangerous ones. Those ones that one bite, you're just dead in five minutes.
The black mamba from wherever it is in Africa, which is a deadly snake. One bite and the whole family's dead.
Electrify the floor or hit them with a big whippy stick.
Or just have very loud music playing all the time and flashing lights.
Mm. Make stroboscopic lights that would give people epileptic fits. Is this intense enough for you?
Or just pack them all into the back of a car and just drive around Paris at high speed, you know.
While screaming at them in English.
While shouting out words from the dictionary. into a loudspeaker. You know those, like, what are those loudspeakers that you can hold in your hand?
Megaphone.
A megaphone. I've just got a megaphone in one hand and a dictionary in the other hand, a phrasal verb dictionary, and I'm just shouting phrasal verbs at them.
Yeah.
That would be intense. Yeah. Well, maybe sort of throwing rocks in their direction. That's intensive general English. You need an intensive English course, James, just to wake you up. But as I said, listeners, to be fair to James, it is way past both of our bedtimes and he should be asleep at this point. So don't hold it against him or me or you. Don't hold anything against anyone and we'll be okay. All right.
I'm sure we've forgotten something about
this. We must have, of course. But listeners, if you know something else about the culture of the English seaside.
Write below. Write and comment and like and subscribe.
Write your comments in the comments section. Don't forget to click that like button and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And
you know what I saw the other day? Someone had written, don't forget to smash that like button till it goes red.
Smash the like button. Don't just click like. You have to smash the like button.
Disgusting. What's wrong
until it goes red?
What's wrong with these people? It was on YouTube or something.
Smash that like button until it goes red.
I mean, it was like some young kid. I think it was a skateboarding thing.
Why is that weird?
It's just horrible.
I want you to spell that out for everyone listening. Why is that weird and horrible?
I don't know. I just think this whole culture of being an internet personality is. I mean, I know that's basically what you are. No, but you're not. You're doing valuable work. You're not just selling bullshit.
But anyway, folks, don't forget to smash that like button until it goes red. Okay, and like and subscribe and. What are the other things that they say on YouTube? Leave a comment in the comments section. I'm giving a free PS4 giveaway. All you need to do is smash that like button, leave a comment in the comments section. One of you is going to receive a PS4.
Disclaimer, no one's going to receive a PS4.
Yeah. Anyway, well, did you have a good holiday, James?
Yeah, it was lovely. And I don't really want to go back to normal life.
No one does. Nobody does. We all understand exactly how you feel. Okay, folks. Well, it's been great to talk to you again on the podcast. And if anyone out there is thinking of taking a holiday on the English seaside, I would recommend going down to the Jurassic Coast there. It was genuinely really nice.
It was.
Any of you know the TV show Broadchurch, quite a famous TV show with David Tennant and Olivia Colman, Broadchurch? Some of you might have seen it. There's that. Where that was filmed, that beach with that big orange cliff, it's not really orange, sort of brown, orangey brown. That's one of the places we visited while we were there. So there you go. All right.
Yeah, come to the British seaside.
Come to the British seaside and get inspired to write a sort of...
Award-winning murder mystery novel.
Exactly. Okay. We look forward to reading your novels, ladies and gents. James, say goodbye to the people of the world.
Bye, listener. You're not supposed to refer to it as everyone. You're supposed to speak to an individual.
Okay, well, say goodbye to...
Thanks for listening.
What should we call this person?
Well, you don't have to call...
How do I know? It's just there's more than one person listening to this.
There's only... Each listener is an individual.
I know what you're saying. That the idea is that you're supposed to talk to the listener as if it's one individual person.
Yes.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, like that. More personal. I'm not like, hey, everybody, because that just seems a bit like...
Impersonal.
Yes, you know English quite well, don't you? Well, thanks, listener. Thanks for listening.
Thanks to
hope
you.
Hope you have a nice rest of day / evening. And come visit the British seaside sometime.
It's not as bad as we made it sound like.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Right, so there you have it. We managed to talk about the English seaside while maintaining consciousness throughout. We didn't fall asleep. So I'd like to thank James again for his participation and for not falling asleep at any point during the conversation. Like I said at the beginning, listening back to that, I didn't sound like I was frustrated at all, right? I thought I'd get more angry and irritated than that. I mean, I thought that when we were recording it, I was thinking, I'm sure I come across as being a bit irritable. But listening back to it, we both just seemed quite relaxed and having a good time. So all in all, I think it was a nice one, wasn't it? I hope you enjoyed spending that time with us in audio form. So I hope you liked it and that it gave you a flavour of what it's like to visit the beach in England. Have a look at the page for this episode on the website. You will find some visuals there to show you some things we were talking about, things like Punch and Judy shows and some of the slightly risque postcards. Risque, that means kind of sexually suggestive. Risque, that's quite a good word, isn't it? It's like risky, but sort of like pronounced as in the French way, risque. So slightly indecent, like slightly rude, liable to shock, especially being a bit sexually suggestive. So we talked about sort of sexually suggestive and risque postcards. So you'll be able to see some of that kind of stuff, just to give you a flavour of that kind of cheap and cheerful fun that you would get at the typical sort of working class English seaside holiday resort. So check out the page for this episode on the website. You'll see visuals there and also a transcript for the intro and also this ending bit that you're listening to now. So just a reminder then, before we go, there is a Lepster meetup happening in London this coming Sunday, the 28th of July, 2019, from 2 p.m. at the Fitzroy Tavern near Oxford Street and Tottenham Court Road. The postcode for your Google Maps app or equivalent is W1T2LY, the Fitzroy Tavern. Full address, 16 Charlotte Street, Fitzrovia, London, W1T2LY. And yes, I can confirm that I will be coming too. So I'll turn up, I'll pop in and stay for a while, probably with James himself and a couple of our friends as well. If you're coming, let the meetup host know. That's Zdenek. You can email him at teacherzdenek@gmail.com just to let him know. If you're wondering which one he is, if you're thinking, how will I know which one is Zdenek? Well, he will be the guy with the board games. Zdenek loves using board games in his English lessons, and he'll be bringing the board games with him just for a bit of fun. So you can have fun, chat, play board games. It's going to be great. It's going to be totally great. Oh, God, why did I do that impression? I don't know why. I don't know. So anyway, it's going to be great. So, what impression, Luke? What are you talking about? I slightly slipped into a Donald Trump impression. It's kind of like something that I do sometimes without intending to do it. I'll say, it's going to be great. And then I just kind of go into like, it's going to be totally great. It'll be the greatest meetup ever. And it's not even a very good impression. Anyway, moving swiftly on, I hope to see you there if you're in London. I might only be able to stay for a little bit, perhaps an hour or so, I don't know. But it would be good to meet you and we can chat in English a bit, perhaps have a drink, maybe play a board game. We will see. Also, premium subscribers, hello. I am working on some material for you, which will arrive soon, okay? That's going to contain the usual language teaching to help you improve your vocab, grammar, and pronunciation. If you're interested in becoming a premium subscriber to get access to all of the premium episodes, and there are loads of them now, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium and you can sign up there. Then use your login details that you create when you sign up to sign into the LEP app to listen to the premium episodes. How do I get the LEP app, Luke? Just go to the App Store on your phone, the Play Store for Google, Android, or the App Store on iOS, and search for Luke's English Podcast app. Okay? So when you've become a member through teacherluke.co.uk/premium, use your login details to sign into the app. And that's how you can listen to all the premium content in the app. Okay? Also, any technical support issues that you have about your premium subscription, you can directly email support@libsyn.com. Support, you know, at Libsyn. That's LIBSYN.com. LIBSYN, Libsyn. Libsyn is my podcast host. They're probably the biggest podcast host in the world, I would say. Probably the number, the sort of the market leader in terms of podcast hosting. Lots of people use Libsyn. So they also handle my premium service. So if you've got a technical question or some sort of query about your premium subscription, email support@libsyn.com and make sure that you mention that you are a subscriber to Teacher Luke, the premium content from Teacher Luke. Teacher Luke is like the code, the name that you will need to use to make sure that they know which service it is. You can say, I subscribe to Teacher Luke's premium content, and you'll need to quote the email address, you know, your login details as well when you email them. Okay, so that's it then. Until next time, and I'm not sure when next time will be, but I'm still teaching crazy, crazy intensive lessons at the British Council this week, but that stops on Friday. Then I'll be going to London. I'll be going back home on Monday, and then I've got like a few days to work on more material for you before things get crazy again, and I'll be going traveling again, going on holiday and stuff again. So August might be busy for me, but I'm attempting to publish content, premium content and normal content during August, to give you stuff to listen to, okay? But it's still a bit of a busy time. I'm not complaining about being busy. No, I like it, but I'm just saying why you might not get the usual amount of content that you have grown to expect over the years. Just summer. It's always like this in summer, isn't it? The number of podcasts goes down a little bit. Anyway, until next time, I shall bid ye farewell in the usual way by saying this. You know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say like goodbye and then fade out slowly like normal. Okay. All right. Let's do it now then. All right. So speak to you soon. Maybe see you on Sunday. But for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.